Good afternoon. Thank you for the live music, for hymns. That's nice. Thank you, Brad, for all the setup. I know Dan helps you take down. I was going to thank your wife, too, for letting you set up all these years. You can thank her for me. She's not here to thank. It's been over 10 years ago. I gave two sermons within a month of each other, a few weeks of each other, that explored a bit of a contrast. The first one was on boldness. I spoke about boldness. You know, how can we be both meek and bold at the same time? There's a contrast right there. What's the appropriate time for each? What is it we're to be bold about? I explored that, and we talked about that. How should we be bold? And how does that fit in with being meek? How does that work? Didn't talk too much about the meek part. Let's talk about being bold. And then a few weeks later, it occurred to me that maybe I should talk about the flip side. And I did another sermon, and I titled that Be Gentle. And we explored the connotations of that messianic prophecy that says that Messiah would not break the bruised reed and would not extinguish the smoldering wick. In other words, that Jesus would be gentle and that he would gently help those who were already damaged, already wounded. And that he did, and we looked at some examples of that. And we saw that Jesus wasn't quarrelsome. He didn't take the argument to people. Sometimes he answered, sometimes he didn't. But he didn't look to be in arguments with people, and neither should we. Well, then, I've told you before that during the summer, sometimes Shelby and I go to the theater in Gettysburg. It's a regular performance theater. And we will look at old movies, watch old movies, movies that typically lots of people have seen. I've never seen because I wasn't from a movie-going family. We didn't watch movies at home that much. So there are things that I haven't seen, and there are almost always older movies. And the last one we saw was called Harvey. And Harvey is a Jimmy Stewart movie, and his co-star is a 6 foot 3.5 inch rabbit. Has anybody ever seen this movie? Because you have, okay. Only one. I never saw it until here recently. But I'll be describing bits of it for the rest of you that haven't seen it, and I won't spoil the ending for you. It was first on Broadway in about 1945, I think. Probably was on Broadway for a good 5 or 6 years, I guess. It was 5,000 or so. Not five. I'm sorry, 1,500 performances or so. And it was adapted into a movie in 1950. So this movie's older than I am. And it was, for those that care about these things, it was faithfully adapted into a movie because Mary Chase, who wrote the play for Broadway, was also the one who wrote the screenplay for the movie. So she didn't change it very much. And the movie's very much like the play. I've never seen the play, so I wouldn't know. Jimmy Stewart plays a very eccentric 40-something age bachelor. And his name is Elwood P. Dowd, as he will tell you dozens of times in the movie. And he inherited a property from his mother. I don't remember if the movie says anything about his father. His father must have died when he was very young, perhaps, or never was a father, not sure. But the mother willed the property to him, even though he was the younger brother. He had an older sister. So he and his older sister and his sister's daughter, the niece, lived there in this house. And why did she will it to the younger one? Probably because he took care of her. It says in the movie, his sister says, well, he took care of my mother, and she died in his arms. So she willed the property to him. And she had died, I want to say, about maybe 5 years before this movie is supposed to have taken place. And let's see. I don't want to tell you too much yet, but I got to tell you enough to make this make sense. It appears, from the way the play and the movie are set up, that one of Elwood's coping mechanisms when his mother died was to have this 6 foot, 3.5 inch rabbit that was his constant companion. And he would talk to this rabbit The rabbit's name's Harvey. He would talk to the rabbit, he'd open doors for it, and so forth. And only he could see it, and apparently from time to time, maybe somebody else. I'll compress the whole story. Long story short, his sister gets tired of him because he embarrasses her in front of all of her friends. He's a society type, wants to have parties, wants to marry your daughter off, wants to do all these things. And when people come over, her brother wants to introduce people to his rabbit, to Harvey, and they go crazy. They can't handle that, and they want to leave. So she can't have a social life, and she gets so frustrated with it, and her daughter gets so frustrated with it that his sister decides to commit him to an asylum. And she takes him there. He doesn't really care. He doesn't seem to know what's going on. And she commits him to an asylum. And when she does that, I won't ruin the plot for you, but there's a whole comedy of errors that occurs when this takes place. And that's most of the play, or most of the movie, is based on what happens after she tries to put him in the asylum. And it ends in a very poignant scene, which I can't tell you about, which causes the audience to think twice about what it really means to be normal, what it means to be crazy. But you'll have to see the movie to understand that. What made a big impact on me, and ties in with the first thing I told you, was that Jimmy Stewart's character, Elwood P. Dowd, it was the nature of that character. What about it? Well, more than anything else, he was a really nice guy. He was a really nice guy. Yeah, so what? You know, just playing nice guys, right? Yeah, he was a bit crazy. He may have known it and didn't care. In fact, when he was first taken to the institution, the doctor was asking him a bunch of questions. And I got the quotes here so I don't mess it up. The doctor asked him something about reality and, you know, had some kind of a potion going to fix him or whatever, I don't know, that he could help. And Elwood P. Dowd says, "Well, I've wrestled with reality for 35 years, doctor, and I'm happy to state that I finally won out over it." So maybe the character knows a little bit about what's going on. That's part of the interplay with the audience in the movie. But yeah, he might have been crazy, but was also totally nice and polite and unfailingly, under all circumstances in the movie, he is nice, and he is polite, and he is very pleasant. At one point, he says, and I forget who he said this to, he said, "Years ago, my mother used to say to me, she'd say, 'In this world, Elwood, you must be,'" she always called me Elwood, "'In this world, Elwood, you must be so smart, or oh so pleasant.' Well, for years, I was smart. I recommend pleasant, and you can quote me on that." So did he know? Yeah, I don't know. It's a movie, but it was interesting. He is indeed very pleasant in the movie and doesn't come across as very smart, but maybe he's the smartest one, you know. Can I interrupt and tell, this isn't a joke, this was a comic strip, but this will get the point across too. I don't even remember I don't remember what comic strip it was, but I remember there was a beach bum, and somebody goes up and accosts the beach bum and just says, "You know, what are you doing, man? What, you don't have any ambition? You don't want to do anything? You don't want to go get a job and earn a lot of money and, you know, and be something? And, you know, so that you can have all this and then you can do what you want?" And the guy says, "Like what? Like..." And the guy that says, "Like, you know, go where you want and do what you want." He said, "You know, like lay out on the beach." And then whoever was accosting in the first place said, "You might be the smartest man in the world." Anyway, the Elwood P. Dowd character might be the smartest man in the world in some ways. Well, I've also spoken before about legacy. what you'll be remembered for. At this point in my life, I can be relatively sure that if I die on the way home or something like that, and there's a funeral and everybody comes to the funeral, that probably, I can't imagine anybody there saying, "What a nice guy he was." Because I'm not Elwood P. Dowd. I thought, well, on the way up, I thought there might be an exception to that. There's people that I volunteer for in the county where I live. They don't know anything about the rest of my life. They would probably think I'm a nice guy because I do things for them for free and so on. But, that's not what I'm going to be remembered for at this point in my life. That was a really nice guy. Maybe, he's forthright, he's honest, he'll tell you what he thinks. He's plain spoken, he's blunt, Maybe those kind of things I'll be remembered for, but not for being a nice guy. Those won't be the adjectives that are used to describe me at this point. But maybe I have enough time left. We'll see. With God, anything's possible. So, maybe I have time left to be known as a nice guy. Well, Elwood P. Dowd was consistently and unfailingly nice and polite. And he showed this in many ways. He remembered everybody's name. He introduced strangers to one another. Made sure he did that. He was hospitable. He was kind. He seemed unaware of the slights and criticisms that went on around him. Or if he was aware of them, he just ignored them. And he saw the best in everyone. So today, can we learn something from this crazy man? I suggest we can. Are Elwood P. Dowd's qualities godly qualities? Let's look at the Bible and see. If you want titles, I know the man in the back wants a title. Be nice. Be nice is the title. Now, Hugh's got a series, in the teens now, sermons about what it means to be a Christian, to be a friend of Jesus. The bar is very high as he's going through the details there. And he is going through the details, and he's plumbing the depths of it, getting into the details. This sermon will be a little bit different in the sense that we'll just back away from it a little bit. But what we want to see is, in this very one simple subject, see if this, of just being nice, if this crazy man, Elwood P. Dowd, might be onto something, if the Bible backs it up. So first of all, I told you that he remembered everybody's name. He always was careful to introduce people. When Elwood P. Dowd would approach somebody or be approached by somebody, he'd say, "Elwood P. Dowd," and he'd introduce, and he'd say, "Let me give you a card." And he always had a card in his lapel pocket. He had a bunch of cards. And he'd give him a card. He'd say, if you want to give me a call, call this number. That one down there is an old one. Don't use that one. And he'd always do that. And later on, whenever he'd see that person again, he knew that person's name and he'd mention it. Now, the movie doesn't make a big deal about that. I just noticed it. He met somebody one time, he had their name. And I have heard, I didn't look up the quotes, they'll tell, if you've ever been in sales, which I haven't, but I've read and studied some about it, to learn people's names, learn things about them, that's, you show an interest in people. Now, if you're in sales, you're just doing it because you want to make a sale. Elwood P. Dowd did it because he actually cared about people. And he would always make sure he'd introduce people. If he was talking, he knew this person and he knew this person, he'd want to make sure that this person, that they knew each other. And he'd introduce them. I'm bad with that. My wife always has to point out, he didn't introduce me to whoever. I'm better now, but I used to assume that she knew everybody I knew, which wasn't the case. It's getting to be more, the older you get, the more that is the case. Well, in 1 Peter 4, and this scripture covers more than one of the points, 1 Peter chapter 4. We'll start there in verse 8. To see if this crazy man's on to something. 1 Peter 4, verse 8 says, "And above all things, have fervent charity." I got the King James with me today. "Fervent love among yourselves, for love will cover the multitude of sins." Now, how do you focus on others? How do I focus on others? Well, I know what my history is. I know what I tend to be. When I grew up, my focus was on other people's faults and how that could affect me. I tend to be one who focuses on faults. I'm trying to change. But that's the way I was kind of brought up. That's the way I turned out, put it that way. Not blaming anybody, it's just the way I turned out. Blame myself. You know, love covers the multitude of sins. Love doesn't dwell on the sins. Love doesn't look to for someone's sins as an opportunity to criticize them. Love covers them. In other words, you put it out of your mind. And verse 9, I'll read it now, but it's the next point. Use hospitality to one another without grudging. Can, you know, and then look at verse 10. It's interesting. And every man has received, as every man has received the gift, even so to minister or serve the same to one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. That's a really interesting way of putting it, I think. We're stewards of the manifold grace of God. In other words, God gives us certain things, and we're stewards of it. What's a steward? A steward is someone who looks over, who manages, who watches something for somebody else. So God's given us certain gifts. He's given you certain gifts. He's given me certain gifts. And we are stewards of those gifts. How are we using them? What are we doing with them? And to be a good steward, obviously, is to use them in godly ways. How do you use the resources that God's given you? How do I use? You know, am I graceful? Is my life, is my being a conduit for God's grace? I don't know how many people would say that about me. I doubt it'd be too many. And I might be a conduit for some other things, but what people say, I'm graceful. And that's something we need to look at in ourselves. I have had opportunity on some occasions to be involved with people who wanted to lecture me or lecture other people about grace. In other words, I don't mean this. I don't mean to say that I have the right to come to you, and when you criticize or you don't like it because I didn't do something, I snored during church and fell asleep on the floor or something, and you took issue with that. And I say, well, you need to be graceful, and I lecture you on grace. I don't mean that. Or if I misuse you, you know, I do something I shouldn't do. That's not the point. But I've been on the receiving end of that, where somebody can lecture me about grace because that person doesn't want to do what's right. Not because I'm trying to pick on that person, but because, you know, they want to lecture. I don't mean to use grace that way. I mean grace in the sense that we really do forgive and really do reach out to people that need it, just the way Jesus did. So we're stewards of God's grace. How do we use that? How do we use that? Are we graceful? I guess another way to describe Elwood P. Dowd in this play or movie is that he was graceful. Well, there's a lot of things I'll cover later, but he was willing to overlook. He's willing to forgive or not even notice in the first place. He had made, in this movie, it's a movie, you know, he had made a conscious decision to not be offended by the way people were. Now, that's an interesting thing, too. I don't have this in my notes, but this I'm sure I've told you before at some point, but years ago, I can remember a specific instance a long time ago in different church areas, where something caused an offense to me and my family. And, you know, I went to the person and they basically, you know, didn't take ownership of it at all. And I thought, here's what you're supposed to do. Go to them alone, get a friend, you know, get whatever, and escalate it, right? And I realized, this happened a couple of times, I realized that in each case, the person wasn't going to be changed by me or me and someone else, or even by taking it to the church, whatever we thought that meant at the time. And it was a hard thing for me, but I'm one of these ones that I think justice, everything has to be even and equal. We have to have righteousness, which means if you've sinned, you got to pay or whatever. It's just kind of the way my brain worked. I realized that it said, if you're offended, you need to do these things. And I realized I had the option of whether I was going to be offended or not. And I decided to not be offended in both cases and remain, and I could be good friends and I didn't have to follow through that whole thing, which would have had a terrible outcome, I think. It was my choice whether to be offended or not. And I noticed watching this movie that Elwood P. Dowd had numerous opportunities to be offended. Many, all through the movie, all the time. All kinds of things are happening to him. All kinds of things are being said about him right in his presence. And he's not offended by it. In fact, I didn't put the other quote in here. He's describing to someone what happens. And, you know, he says, well, you know, we sit down at a table. He frequents this bar. You know, we sit down and people come and they have their big problems and their big issues. And they tell me and they, you know, and I can't do justice to the quote. And he introduces them to Harvey. And he said, none of them have a problem bigger than Harvey. And he says, they never come back. They never come back. Of course, that's the story. Every time people realize he's crazy, they don't come back and associate with him. But he says, they don't come back. He says, but that's envy. You know, they're jealous they don't have a Harvey, I guess. He says, there's a little bit of envy in all of us. But he chooses to not be offended. And we can choose that too. That's part of being graceful. We don't have to be offended just because something has happened. In 1 John, we're in 1 Peter, I think. We can go to 1 John, don't have to go far. Chapter 4. Could read the whole chapter, and I'm not going to. Could read half of it, which I was going to, but even then I don't know that I will. Let's see. 1 John chapter 4. I'm going to start in verse 7. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God. And everyone that loves is born of God and knows God. And he that loves not knows God, not God, for God is love. So, and we have to have this love for one another. If you, by the way, I never mentioned it, but if you want a point here, this is the first point we're talking about, that Elwood remembered everybody's name and he introduces every strangers, and I would call it, it's a respect for others. Elwood B. Dowd had a respect for others. He looked up to others in a way. So John 4, let's see. I want to skip down. God loved us, verse 11, so we need to love one another. And get all the way down to verse 20. If a man say, I love God and hates his brother, he's a liar. For he that loves not his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has not seen? And this command we have from him, that he who loves God loves his brother also. So we claim to be Christian, that's the point. And we need to love each other, and we need to love others, period. And that's part of our job. I happened to see, I didn't watch any of the conventions, but I did see one of the prayers later on a video, and I noticed that one of the people that prayed specifically said we pray for our enemies. You know, that's something Christians do, because we're told to. So love is compatible with boldness. It's not compatible with arrogance or meanness. You know, this is a nature of God. God, we can be bold without being arrogant and mean. Now, I've given sermons on loving God, loving neighbor, and then who is your neighbors. So you can write down Luke 10:27. I won't turn there. But love, you know, we're to love our neighbor as ourself. That's showing a respect for others. Love our neighbor as ourself. And the Good Samaritan answers, that parable answers the question, who is my neighbor? You know, the one in need is our neighbor. Elwood P. Dowd, in the movie, everyone he meets is his neighbor. He likes everyone. He said, another quote, he said, I don't remember who he said it to or what the occasion was, but he said, I have a good time wherever I am and whomever I'm with. He either said, I enjoy it, or I have a good time, something like that. He's unfailingly positive. Whether the mailman says, it's a nice day, isn't it? He says, every day's a nice day. Every day's a nice day. So there's, yeah, obviously every day's not a nice day in the same sense, but you get my point. There's a positive approach, and an approach of respecting other people and their point of view. Don't even have to agree, but you can respect it. You can write down Deuteronomy 10 in verse 19, where it says, you know, show love or respect for the stranger, the alien within you, you know, because you were aliens in Egypt. So they were told to even look after other people and respect strangers or aliens. If we're in the New Testament here, let's look at Hebrews. I can turn to Hebrews chapter 13. Let brotherly love continue in verse 1, Hebrews 13, 1. Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. I guess referring to back in Genesis when different people would be hospitable and turned out they were angels. And lastly, on this point, turn to Romans 12 if you would, and you can put a marker there, put your thumb there if you want to keep it for a while, because this verse is good for several points, or these verses. Romans chapter 12 and verse 9 says, let love be without dissimulation or without hypocrisy. Abhor that which is evil, cleanse that which is good. Be kindly affectionate, verse 10. Kindly affection one to another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another. So we show respect for one another. We look up to one another. And that's a certain approach. And some people are better at that than others, but we all need to strive for that. I'm one who needs to strive. I'm not giving this sermon to you. I'm kind of giving it to myself more than anybody else, because these things that I saw in this movie, these things that I'm reading in these scriptures, they are not my natural way of being. And I'm hoping I have enough time in my life that they can become more natural. And then somebody might dare describe me this way sometime from away in the future. The second point, I'm going to talk about hospitality. I'm not going to spend much time here because it's like the first one. But in the movie, when Elwood P. Dowd would meet somebody, I told you he'd say hi. Elwood P. Dowd, always say his whole name. Elwood P. Dowd, or his whole name with the initial. He'd say, let me take one of my cards. And he'd reach into his lapel pocket and he'd tell him, here's my card. Call this number, not the other one. It's the old one. He'd say the same thing every time. And they'd say, do you think maybe you could come over to the house for dinner? That was the next thing he'd always say. I saved that. I didn't want to tell you in the first point. Think you can come over to my house for dinner? Maybe tomorrow night, 7? And people would always say yes. Of course, they never came. Or they'd say maybe. Or always hospitable. Invite people over. Because why? It ties in with respect. It ties in with wanting to share with other people. It ties in with looking up to them. While we're here in Romans 12, verse 13 mentions distributing to the necessity of saints, given to hospitality. You're looking after one another's needs, being hospitable. So you still stay there. We'll use this chapter again. I already read Hebrews 13 about being hospitable, and we already referred to 1 Peter chapter 4. And I might have skipped over verse 9. I don't remember, but I'll read it now. Use hospitality to one another without grudging. So the Bible's full of encouragement to be hospitable to one another, because it's part of loving one another. Another thing about Elwood P. Dowd is he was kind. In the movie, he was very kind. Now, kind's one of those nebulous words. It can mean so many things. In what way was he kind? Well, in some of the ways I'm talking about in these other points, but also one of the things about him, he was uncomfortable seeing someone standing up when he was sitting down. He said, won't you have a seat? He didn't want people to be standing up talking to him. He wanted them to sit down. He wanted them to be, down there with him, or, not be uncomfortable. That's one. There are other ways. He had kind words for everyone, and we'll talk more about that later. Always had a kind word. Always had a kind word. Yeah, I can say it now. I mean, there was a nurse, a beautiful nurse, that was at the institution, and he had picked a flower outside, and he was trying to put it in his lapel button. But it was like this jacket here, or his lapel hole. He didn't have a hole, didn't have a buttonhole. So he's messing with it like this. And finally he says, would you like to have the flower? And he gives the flower to her. And later on she has it on. He says, her name is Kelly, I think. He says, Kelly, when you wear that flower, you make it look beautiful. Well, that's a really, really kind thing to say. But he was, the movie's full of that. Jimmy Stewart had said, that this was one, if not his favorite, one of his favorite roles. And he played it on Broadway for a while. He didn't just play it once like he did a lot of movie roles. He played this repeated, and they reprised it in his later life, and he played it again. I can see, watching the movie, I can see why maybe it was a favorite role. I don't know what he liked to do or didn't like to do, but this one, I don't know, it just seemed like it would have been fun. A fun movie to make. They said that during the making of the movie, the lunchtime, you know, they order out for, you know, they order food in, that they'd set up an empty chair for the rabbit and order food in for him. Not every day, but somebody would do that a lot of days, just as a joke. I don't know what they ordered for the rabbit. A bowl of lettuce or something. But be kind. Be kind. It's the third point. So I got, you know, respect, have respect for others, be hospitable to others, and be kind. That's part of being nice. You say, well, that can mean the same thing. Yeah, maybe. But the word kind is used in the Greek in the New Testament. It's something, I got to go back to Romans again. Romans chapter 12, and this time verse 10. Be kindly affectionate to one another. Okay? I didn't refer to that before, or didn't emphasize it before, but it says be kindly affection to one another. In the love chapter, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, the very first verse of that says, excuse me, though I speak with tongues of men and angels, but if I don't have charity, it becomes as a sounding brass, a tinkling cymbal. You know, it talks about charity and love, and all right? And we get down to verse 4, it says, charity suffers long and is kind, doesn't envy, and so forth. But it's kind. Love is kind. I'd like to be known as being kind. I won't be at this point in my life, but maybe that can change. In Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians 4. In verse 32. I recommend the movie, by the way. It's a good movie. That's why I'm not spoiling the end for you in case you want to go watch it. Called Harvey, 1950. Jimmy Stewart. Made me think a lot. Besides being an enjoyable movie to watch, it made me think. And movies don't usually make me think. I usually like to watch things that are really stupid, funny, spoofs, and things like that. They don't make me think at all. They just make me laugh. But I see serious movies sometimes in this summertime series in Gettysburg. I have to think a little bit. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 32 says, be kind to one another and tenderhearted, forgiving one another, for even as God for Christ's sake has forgiven you. You know, of all people, we should be kind because God has been kind to us. And that's part of being a conduit for God's grace, for being a good steward of God's grace. He has forgiven us. In that sense, he's kind to us. Why, you know, we should certainly be kind to others. It goes back to that parable of Jesus, you know, where the one was forgiven his debt and then he went ahead and exacted it out of somebody else. You know, that's the wrong approach. We have our debts forgiven, our sins forgiven. We need to be very kind and forgiving to other people. And then, I don't know how much to make of this, but in 2 Peter, I thought this was interesting. 2 Peter chapter 1. Usually, if you have a list of things here and then you add something to this and add something to that, the more important things come at the end. And if that's the case, then this is very interesting. 2 Peter chapter 1. Grace and peace be multiplied to you, verse 2. According as his divine power has given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness, even through the knowledge of him that has called us to glory and virtue, whereby are given unto us exceeding great and precious promises. Again, I'm reading from the King James. And notice what it says here. It says, verse 5, and besides this, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, and to your virtue knowledge. So we're adding them, we're piling it on, right? And add to your knowledge temperance, and add to temperance patience, and add to patience godliness, and add to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness love. So it's at least the way it's worded here gives me the impression that when he's writing this, he says that the kindness is a higher goal in some ways than some of these other things. We need to add that. We need to have a godly kindness, a care for each other. And these are, for the most part, expounded in the New Testament. We have some scriptures in the Old Testament. We'll turn to a couple. But in the Old Testament, you've got a history. You've got a history of a lot of unconverted people in most cases. And what they do is not always the best thing. They're not always good examples of God's way of life. But in the New Testament, it's like, you know, we need to be different. You can't just look back at your heroes and say, I want to be like that. Because some of them were, many of them were bad examples and didn't follow godly characteristics. They just happened to be great heroes, like we have our Jeffersons and Washingtons and Lincolns and so forth. The Israelites had theirs too. And they were heroes of the country and heroes of the nation, but they weren't necessarily always good examples of how God wanted people to behave. So we have a lot of instruction in the New Testament. And being kind is not something it's not an adjective you would put on many of the Old Testament heroes, because they're leading battles and fighting and whatever. They're doing all kinds of things like that, some heroic things, but they're not necessarily being kind. But Jesus comes and he says, you know, there's more to it than what you all thought. And Hugh's going through that. I don't want to cover his sermons. You know, he's saying, you always heard it's this. Well, I say, you know, it's more than that. It's more than that. And here in 2 Peter, it's interesting that there's a list of things. Add to this. And when you get to the top, you get the kindness. You know, that's a godly trait, and it's one of those things you really have to strive toward, because maybe it doesn't come natural at all times. Now, it's easy to be kind when everything's going well. Everything here I'm talking about, you know, when times are good and there's no problem, it's easy, isn't it? But that's not where you really get tested. And that's not where Elwood P. Dowd gets tested in the movie. It's when people come and criticize him to his face and he's still kind. And you realize, oh, well. We'll talk about that in the next point, actually. He was either unaware, I'm already on the fourth point. He either was unaware, because he was mental, or he chose to just ignore the affronts, the slights, the criticisms, the insults. They did not affect him, did not appear to affect him. If you want to title this one, maybe you can call it Turn the Other Cheek. It's not as if you turn the other cheek and say, go, hit me again. But the point is you ignore it. You ignore it. You just walk on, as it were. And Jesus talks about that in Matthew 5. And you don't need to turn there, and Hugh's covered this. You know, if a man asks you to... once your cloak, give him two. Turn the other cheek. Walk with him 2 miles instead of one. In other words, don't take it as an insult. Just be cooperative. Just, you know, ignore the insult. Ignore the insult. In the movie, again, I want to read this so I get it right. I told you that his sister took him up, with a cab, took him up to the insane asylum. And part of the confusion that ensues is that the people at the insane asylum are confused as to who's insane and who's not, and they're missing the cues, they're missing the evidence and so forth. And they get mixed up between his sister and him, and without going into detail, that's what happens. And during the process of that, the guy who runs the asylum is talking to Elwood P. Dowd about his sister. And he says, this sister of yours is at the bottom of a conspiracy against you. She's trying to persuade me to lock you up. Today she had commitment papers drawn up. She has your power of attorney and the key to your safety box, and she brought you here. You know what he responded? My sister did all that in one afternoon. That Veda is certainly a whirlwind, isn't she? That's her name, Vita, Veda, whatever. He's wondering, you know, he's sitting there watching, what's he going to say? No, she did all that in one afternoon. Wow. really accomplish a lot. He refused to be insulted by what she was doing. He chose, I think it goes back to the other quote, he chose pleasant over smart, right? He chose pleasant over smart. He chose, what did he say with, he won out over reality. You know, that's how he deals with it. I'm not suggesting that we need to win out over reality. But what was interesting to me is that the crazy man in the movie does a lot of godly things in how he approaches life. Things that I could follow his example, be good. This happens a lot, not just this one particular quote I just read. It happens a lot where an insult's hurled right at him. He turns it into something. He either ignores it or he turns it into something positive. And, of course, comes across as an idiot, but maybe he's smarter than we think. 1 Corinthians 13, again, it says, being long-suffering. You could make a case that, again, it's a movie, it's whatever the screenwriter wants, but you could make a case that he was long-suffering, that he really knew what was going on and chose to just ignore it and be long-suffering. Most of us are not that way. I am really good. You could ask Shelby. Shelby and the kids, everybody's at the beach in Delaware, staying at Bonnie's mother's trailer. But Shelby would tell you that I'm a excellent pouter. I'm not going to be long. It's not my nature to be long-suffering and smiling. I don't do that very well. Maybe I should. That's the point. I'm trying to learn from this. It's a lot of us want to. I'm not saying in this room necessarily, but as human beings, we want to say, "Yeah, we're long suffering," but we're gonna get some mileage for it, right? We're gonna show it. We're gonna want something. We're gonna want a pound of flesh, like it says in Merchant of Venice. We're not willing to just be long suffering and really endure it and be happy. We're gonna endure it, and be miserable. We're gonna endure it. We want to talk about it later. We want to get maybe paid back. Whatever. We have our ways of dealing with one another. But to be really long-suffering, we don't have to show it. We don't have to show it. In Romans 12, again, now here we're talking about turning the other's cheek, being long-suffering. Romans 12, further down in the chapter, verse 17. It says, "Recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it's possible, as much as lies in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, 'Vengeance is mine; I will repay,' says the Lord." Turn these things over to God. We don't need to exact justice. If your enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, giving drink. Don't be overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. Those are real deep Christian behaviors that are not, they don't come naturally for human beings by any means. In 1 Peter again, this time chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 8. "Finally, be all of one mind, having compassion one of another. Love as brethren, be pitiful and be courteous, not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but contrariwise blessing, knowing that you are thereunto called, that you should inherit a blessing." So we're called to this different kind of life. That's the Christian life, that we are called to endure suffering, and Jesus endured suffering. And the early church and the church throughout history, people have suffered. That's our calling. Our calling isn't to have an easy road. Our calling is to suffer and be long-suffering. And to do it with, not that we're happy about it necessarily, but to do it without complaining, because it's our lot. It's part of our calling. In Matthew chapter 15 and verse 14, Jesus, the disciples were always having trouble. Jesus and the disciples were having trouble with the Pharisees, because the Pharisees were so critical, and the Pharisees were trying to trip them up on details of the law and so forth. And at some point, the disciples were like, "Should we?" They want They want their pound of flesh. They want some kind of justice. You know, in Matthew 15, 14, Jesus says, let them alone. Just leave them alone. They're blind leading the blind. You know, they don't understand. It's okay. Just let them be. Ignore them. So we have this instruction to, we don't need to try to get revenge or vengeance or to make things even. We can just let it go. So hard. Maybe not hard for you, but it's hard for me. I don't like to let things go. It's not natural. But Jesus said, let them go. Let them be. And you can write down Proverbs 20 and verse 22. You can write down Leviticus 19 and verse 18. These are Old Testament verses that Jesus refers to, especially Leviticus 19. You know, love your brother. Don't try to get vengeance. You don't need to have this eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth idea. Yes, they had those kinds of laws in Israel to run a civil government with unconverted people. But Jesus comes and he's teaching a different kind of behavior, and he's teaching it to people who are going to be given the Holy Spirit to dwell in them, and so they will have the power to do it. So it's a different approach than Israel had. But even in Israel's law, it was there. Love your neighbor as yourself. And then the Proverbs says, don't try to exact vengeance. Let that be to God. And finally, I got one more. In the movie, just like with his sister. Elwood's sisters, enrolling him in a, or committing him to an insane asylum. And he compliments her. Oh, she got all this done in one afternoon. He had a unique ability in the movie to see the best in everyone. To see the best in every situation. To get something positive out of what seems to be a negative situation. Early in the movie, he's in his favorite bar there. I think it's called Charlie's or something. And he sees this guy. He hadn't seen him for a while. He says, oh, you've been away. And the man says, yeah, for 90 days. Been doing a job for the state, making license plates. Elwood says, oh, is that so? Interesting work. I can take it or leave it. Oh, I see. I did a job for him last year, too, helping build a road. All right, obviously the guy's in prison for whatever the reason, several times. And Dowd either doesn't know, doesn't care. It was interesting work. What'd you like? You know, he's finding a positive and a negative. Now, I'm not suggesting that we wear blinders and we don't see reality. That's not my point. But the point is we can find positive in bad situations. We can focus on positive. We can have a positive approach. We have a choice, right? You have a choice. Things can be a problem or they can be an opportunity. Things can be a problem or they can be a challenge. Some people have an approach that everything's a problem. So for some people, the thing that's a problem is actually a challenge or excitement or an opportunity for somebody else. If you're one of those people that sees so many things as a problem, open your mind up a bit and listen to these other people that don't see where the problem is and think it's actually kind of interesting. Why? What are you upset about? What are you worried about? You know, think, well, maybe they're onto something. Not that they're blind and can't see the potential problem, but they don't choose to dwell on it in a negative sense. In Philippians chapter 2, and you know these verses. Philippians 2. If there's any consolation in Christ, verse 1, if any comfort of love, any fellowship of the Spirit, if any bowels of mercy, fulfill you my joy that you be like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem other better than themselves. Okay? See the best in other people. Don't have to see the negative. Look, not every man on his own things, but every man on the things of others. And let this mind be in you. I don't need to keep reading. You know, look at others and look at the positive. In In Matthew chapter 18, and I hadn't really paid attention to this before, the context, I hadn't paid attention to the context. Matthew chapter 18, let's see what verse I want to look at first. Well, I didn't, there's a lot of things in Matthew chapter 18, but the context is based on having the approach of a little child. Now, it is, and so, you know, I'll just quote that, wherefore, whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Jesus encourages us to have the attitude of a child. Now, that's, you know, it could give whole sermons, and sometimes we hear those, or we give them when we do the blessing of little children. We think, here's ways we can be like little children, and that's positive. I just want to focus on two things right now today. And one of them is, a child doesn't tend to be negative. It doesn't look for negative motivations, at least not in adults. They start learning for it to look for it in their brothers or sisters or other playmates. But, you know, a little child, a little tiny one, they think everybody's got a good motivation. And they're positive too. And they are, maybe these are combined, maybe it's only one point. They're simple in their approach. They're not complicated. They're not looking for an agenda. They don't have one. Well, kids very soon get their own agenda. That's just to have their own way, but you know what I mean. They're not looking for an agenda versus against people to try to figure out what bad motivations people have. That's something that adults, that us grown-ups do. So we could learn from the children, have a more simple approach, and be willing to be humble and see the best in other people, see the good in other people rather than looking for the negative. Let's see. I'm gonna read Luke 14, verse 10. Is that what I want? When you are bidden and go and sit down in the lowest room, or when you go to a festival, a feast or something like that, sit in the lowest place. Be of low esteem with yourself. Don't try to build yourself up. And then somebody else may ask you, oh, come on up and sit with me. That's good. But don't you sit up there and have them move you and put you back. That's what Jesus is saying. And then in verse 11 it says, for whosoever exalts himself will be abased, and he that humbles himself shall be exalted. So Jesus is saying, start off with more of that attitude of a child. Start off with a lower opinion of yourself and a higher opinion of somebody else. And Jesus set the example. In John 8, you know, that woman was caught in adultery, right? And they brought her to Jesus. You know, what should we do? The law says we should stone her, like right here and now. Well, yeah, what do you think? What do you say? And Jesus writes something in the dirt. And, you know, finally, they, one by one, they leave. And, you know, the woman's like, you don't condemn me? Jesus says, I don't condemn you. Go and sin no more. Jesus was willing to look past what she had done, look past whatever, you know, the situation was right then and there, and look beyond the sin, look into the heart of the sinner, see that she was sorry, apparently, and say, you know, don't do this again. He was willing to not focus on the bad news that was there. It was obvious, not that there wasn't any bad news. Jesus just chose not to focus on that, which is exactly what Elwood P. Dowd does in the movie. He chooses not to focus on the negative stuff that's all around him. He refuses to even notice. So we got 5 points there. That I broke it down to 5 points. I could have done more or less. But we see that being nice, if you want to call it that, being nice is actually godly behavior. And Scripture endorses it. We shouldn't be surprised by that, but anyway. It should not only be crazy people like Elwood P. Dowd who are nice, but also the rest of us. So let's show respect for others. You know, remember their names. Make sure to, you know, introduce people that need to be introduced. Be hospitable. Be kind. Ignore the slights, the insults that come our way. And try to see the best in everyone. I don't know how much time I have left. I don't, know exactly how my reputation will end up, but I will focus. I'm going to focus on these things. And just maybe at my funeral, someone will say, boy, what a nice guy. I hope so. But no matter how old or how young you are, it's never too late to be nice.